Hi, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Born to Talk radio show. And you know it's a passion for me. And I just have to just say this just quickly before I start telling you about this wonderful guest I have today. This past Sunday marked my 10-year anniversary of hosting the Born to Talk radio show. And I can't tell you how proud it makes me to be a part of this. My friend Deb Blaine made this all possible for me, and I'm just delighted that I am able to share my passion about what other people do, which is their passion. And my guest today is actually joining me for the second time. Her name is Erica Hartman, and she is the CEO of Safe Place for Youth. Welcome to the show, Erica.
Thank you so much, Marcia. It's such a pleasure to be here with you again, and congratulations on your anniversary. That's really incredible, the work you've been doing.
Thank you so much. Well, for people that may not have heard our first podcast together, I think it's really important for people to understand a little bit about you. So if you wouldn't mind, just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Absolutely. So in my current role, I am administering services through our nonprofit, Safe Place for Youth, that supports youth experiencing homelessness. But I started out my career as a marriage and family therapist, working with youth in the juvenile justice system, and then moving into supporting young people through foster care and adoptions. And that's where I first got introduced to Safe Place for Youth. We were funding their pregnant and parenting case management program. And over time, had the opportunity to work with them in the homeless services sector. I was the chief program officer of the Downtown Women's Center for a period of time. And then it's been an incredible honor to fill the shoes of the founder here at Safe Place for Youth.
It's you have a giving heart, my friend. Let's
Thank
talk
you.
About Safe Place for Youth, which also people know as SPY, S period, P period, Y period. So how did Safe Place for Youth start, and when did it start?
Yes. So our founder, Allison Hurst, started Safe Place for Youth in 2011. And really, this was a passion project for her and her friends and a group of dedicated volunteers. Allison is from England, and she came to Venice and saw the number of young people experiencing homelessness and was trying to understand the crisis of homelessness and how it was possible that young adults and even children are unhoused in our community. And in her efforts to try to get them connected to supportive services, came to discover that there really were no services for youth on the west side of LA. And so from there, they began, you know, taking meals and hygiene kits out to the Oceanfront Walk and distributing those and building relationships. And we've grown and grown from there.
It's pretty remarkable. Where are you actually located physically?
Yeah, so we have 9 sites across the county, and we do have some housing programs where youth are housed in their own permanent housing locations, again, across the county. So we do some field-based services. The majority of our services are in West LA. Our headquarters is in Venice, but we have some housing properties in Inglewood, in Echo Park, and various other locations.
Okay, that's good to know. So for those people that don't know a lot about Safe Place for Youth, why don't you share what your mission is?
So Safe Place for Youth's mission is to prevent and end youth homelessness through supportive services, sustainable housing opportunities, community collaboration, and advocacy. And we do that in various different types of ways. And but, you know, all these are really core pillars of the work that we do.
Yes. And, you know, tell me something. When we say youth, can you define the age of youth?
Yeah. So at our drop-in center, we see young people as young as 12, and we are able to house people up until 25. We do also have a number of young parents who come through our doors. So our 2 pregnant and parenting houses support young families. And we also, in our drop-in center, each year see over 100 young people who come in with their babies or children. And we primarily see young parents with children under the age of 5.
Wow. So who do you serve?
So the young people that come to us, many of them have previously been in the child welfare system. A lot of the young people who age out of the child welfare system really have nowhere to go. And, one of the things that I'll share more about later, it just is our work to immediately house young people who maybe on their day of emancipation don't have a family member or a housing plan. But we also see young people who are fleeing unsafe living situations. We see a lot of young people who identify as LGBTQ plus, and maybe are facing, family conflict over that. We do see young people fleeing domestic violence situations. So often it is, young people coming from really tough circumstances and struggling to find jobs, struggling to build their credit to be able to sustainably be housed.
Do the local schools know about you guys?
We do have some partnerships with schools. We have also relationships with some of the local colleges like Santa Monica and UCLA, USC. The young people who are in high school or elementary school ultimately can't be housed without guardian permission and get connected to the child welfare system. So sometimes schools will refer to us for things like basic needs resources, or if they know that there's a young family who's unhoused. But in general, if they're trying to house an unaccompanied minor, then they refer to the child welfare system.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay. So you do some wonderful things, Erica, and we have plenty of time and opportunity to hear about them. I'd like it if you could just tell us about some of the types of programs and services that you offer.
Yeah, so there are over 3,000 young people in LA County at any given time who are experiencing homelessness. And we see over 1,000 young people each year. And the youth who come to us are facing a whole host of different types of challenges. And so we try to offer support across the continuum of their needs. And sometimes we even see folks who maybe are housed, but can't get enough income to buy diapers or formula or need some support with clothing or meals. And these are all resources that we make available through our drop-in center. We do have a street outreach team that goes out into the community and the local parks, out to the beach and the boardwalk to identify young people and try to connect them to services from there. Most homeless services that are publicly funded run through a system called the Coordinated Entry System. And so this is kind of an initial touch point with young people to assess their level of need. If they're looking for housing, do they need housing that supports different abilities? Do they need something that helps them address substance use or severe mental health? And so that's really an initial triage for young people as they come through our drop-in center. We try to be as low barrier as possible. A lot of these young people have, ruptured attachment, difficulty, building trust because the adults in their life have, broken that trust. And so we try to not ask too much of them as they come through our doors. So young people can access services through our drop-in center up to 3 times before we ask them to complete an intake. But ultimately, we know that it's not enough to just have them come to a drop-in center, that they need more sustainability down the line. So we invite people in to come have their meals, to come participate in our healing arts workshops, things like guitar class, fine arts. We've had dance, different types of music. And a lot of young people specifically connect with the art and the basic needs resources first. So we offer laundry, we offer showers, anything like clothing, winter clothing, just to try to, help people in that initial triage. And then from there, we can start to have conversations about, what is their housing status? Do they need to be connected to a case manager? Do they need mental health support? And these are all services we offer out of our new Venice drop-in center. And we have partnerships with different types of providers. Venice Family Clinic comes and does medical once a week. We have a partnership with UCLA for dental. Betsedic does our legal clinics. And so really, you know, trying to meet young people where they are and hear from them directly. And then from there, we are able to connect them to either our shelter supports, our transitional housing. So the transitional housing is for 1 to 3 years. Young people can, you know, build some income and, you know, maybe address some immediate trauma. And then from there, we move them into permanent housing, either helping them to increase their income and secure housing independently, help them clear credit. And our education and employment program will connect them to the local colleges, to local employers. One of the ways in which we support youth in the employment program is through our paid garden internships program. So we have a partnership with Beyond Baroque to have a really beautiful, lush community garden that young people plant and harvest seasonal fruits and veggies. It's a really beautiful flower garden. And we pay an internship stipend so young people can, you know, have Safe Place for Youth as their employer for up to 200 hours and, you know, build something for their resume, develop some references. So we really, you know, try to look at the whole person and see where we can most support them and plug in.
I've been to your community garden and it is quite beautiful.
Oh, thanks.
So let me understand a few things about what you said. When you talk about transitional housing, if you're a 13-year-old, and you run away from home because, for whatever reason, does that mean that you probably are not going to elementary or you're not going to school at all? You're just on the street?
That's true of some young people, especially if they're fleeing a particular situation, is they, you know, try to avoid places where somebody might be looking for them. And there are a couple organizations that offer shelter for minors, and the youth can stay there for up to 90 days. But again, they ultimately fall under the jurisdiction of the county if they are a minor. So, for example, our housing programs, young people need to be at least 18 before we can, you know, legally house them in one of our programs. But yes, they often do not go to school because that is somewhere that folks might be looking for them.
I understand now. So your folks are basically 18 and above, and so that takes that whole legal thing out of it altogether because they're of a legal age at 18, correct?
Yeah. For the housing programs, for the drop-in center, sometimes we have, you know, minor age folks come through that participate in art. Maybe they need a meal, but if we are aware that they're family or guardian isn't protecting them and supporting them, then we do have a responsibility to connect them to Child Protective Services.
Oh, that's good. I mean, that's as it should be. That's what, I mean, obviously we want them to be protected.
Yeah.
And, you know, because of, you know, not everybody that listens to the show has an understanding of where Venice is and the location that you are, but there is a beach community in Venice, and it's a nice place. It's weather wise, you know, you're not fighting off snow and things like that. And so I don't know if that means that there are maybe young people that live in other parts of the country that try and get themselves out to this part of the country to just escape that. Does that ever happen?
Yeah, we see young people from lots of different places. We often find folks, you know, I mean, similar to adults, even who are housed, there's a lot of young people that come out because they have sort of dreams of stardom in Hollywood. And, you know, Venice attracts a lot of young people who are musicians and artists. But also LA County has the largest child welfare system, largest foster care system in the county, in the country. And so there are about a third of the young people that we see have come out of the child welfare system, often in LA. So it is kind of a combination of all of it, but it's certainly Venice is lovely and more hospitable than some of these other environments. And, you know, we do see a greater level of acceptance of folks' identities and orientations. And so I think especially young people who maybe are coming from a community that is not particularly accepting of their identity find a more inclusive environment, you know, where we are.
That makes sense. So what do you think are some of the causes of youth homelessness right now?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it ends up coming down to not having a supportive social network. And so, again, the, you know, not having a strong family or, you know, even one loving, caring adult in their life who can help establish self-esteem and can help walk them through, you know, even how to apply for a job, how to interview, you know, what is the protocol people are expecting. And then just generally, you know, things like young people who, you know, for whatever reason, find themselves on their own, have a much harder time, you know, getting their first job, getting an income that can support living in LA, you know, paying for school. And one of the programs that we have is specifically the Campus Peer Navigator program. And we see young people at UCLA, at Santa Monica City College, who are enrolled and they are doing everything in their power to complete their degrees so that they can be gainfully employed. But in the meantime, they're sleeping in their cars, they're sleeping in abandoned buildings. And so that's where our campus peer navigators go out and actually identify them on the college campuses so that they can connect them to resources that will enable them to be able to finish school. So it is, it's kind of a range of different walks of life that we see people from and the causes. But at the end of the day, you know, Los Angeles is an expensive place to live. And I think that, you know, sometimes people don't recognize that until they're here. And at that point are really struggling to have the level of income needed. So, you know, some folks are employed, you know, they have a degree, but to be able to make enough money to afford their rent is what's really tough.
It's interesting. I think that people probably don't understand just how serious our homeless population is, whether they're the young people that you serve or those that are much older. The homeless encampments are everywhere now. And it doesn't really matter where you live. You see people laying on park benches or at the bus stop, or you just see them walking and they look lost. It's a really sad situation, and I'm sure we're not unique in that, but because our weather is not as difficult, I think our homeless population probably, like you say, attracts people because of that weather situation, but it certainly is a problem. And I would like to know what some of the challenges that you guys are addressing in youth homelessness.
Yeah. So to speak to kind of what you had just mentioned too, you know, we are kind of facing this epicenter of homelessness. And I know for myself, that's part of how I made the pivot from, you know, working in the foster world to homelessness was that I was commuting and I really just saw the geographic spread of homelessness. And it was all these places where I had never seen people trying to survive now really just, you know, trying to, you know, make an existence. And so I do think that that really got my attention for sure. And the adult chronic homeless population, there was recently a study done by the Corporation for Supportive Housing in USC that found that 50% of the chronically homeless adults had their first experience of homelessness as a youth. And so for me, that was really kind of, just like this light bulb eye-opening to help people understand that, you know, this is a really critical issue to address if we're going to address adult homelessness. And as you've said, you know, these encampments, they're not good for anybody. They're not good for the housed community. They're also not good for the unhoused community. And so we really want to find a way to, you know, to help people out of that situation. And, you know, with youth, you know, everybody who's unhoused is vulnerable, but young people especially And we, you know, a lot of our young people tell us about, you know, the efforts to exploit them, you know, even just trying to, you know, identify resources, you know, come up with the strategies of people to rely on to help them, you know, get out of these circumstances is much harder for young people. A lot of young people also, you know, are facing kind of competing pressures, you know, and, you know, we know as folks as brain development happens, you know, they develop greater, you know, executive functioning and ability to come up with strategies. And a lot of young people are still learning some of that. And so being able to help them with longer term planning, helping them think through, like, this may not be your ideal step in this moment, but it might get you a little bit closer to where you want to be long term. And I think that overall, what we see as a big challenge is just the lack of resources for young people. So a lot of the work that we've been doing has been trying to increase awareness of the importance of youth-specific services. There was a shelter in Venice that we were operating in partnership with another adult serving organization called PATH, that was on a leased property from the city that the city ultimately decided was going to be redeveloped into housing. And so when that shelter closed, we inquired of the young people about, if there were no options other than adult shelter, would they go into an adult shelter? And 60% said they would rather take their chance on the street than go into an adult shelter. And so that for me really underscored the importance of the work that we're doing. And now that that shelter is closed, there are no youth shelters in West LA. Which is kind of unfathomable that with as large as it is, that there's not a single place, exclusively dedicated to young people. And so as part of our strategic planning process, we made this a priority that in the next 3 years, you know, one way or another, we're going to figure out shelter for these young people in West LA.
That's great. What are some of the strategies that you guys are using to just address this homelessness process that these safe place for youth are pursuing?
Yeah, we in this, we had our strategic planning process in the last year. And as we looked at our mission, we were really trying to identify, you know, what are those key strategies. And we also identified that one of those strategies is to be more engaged and involved in the prevention space. And figuring out either how do we keep people who are imminently at risk of homelessness from falling into homelessness, and then how can we move people out quickly so that we minimize, you know, the time that they are on the street. And so prevention strategies were an initial part of the emphasis. You know, of course, the supportive services along the continuum of, you know, what people's particular needs are. Different types of housing. So, you know, we have short-term shelter housing all the way through to permanent housing. And the community collaboration has been a really key part of our mission because, you know, as I mentioned, we were an entirely volunteer-led organization for many years. And so really value, you know, the community's participation in addressing this issue. And, you know, thank you to you for helping amplify this issue because that, you know, that's also a really important aspect from the community is when people can hear in their community about, you know, the importance of addressing youth homelessness and how they can get involved. That really takes the message to new audiences. And then lastly, really looking at how legislative advocacy, you know, can impact some of these issues. So a lot of the challenges that contribute to youth homelessness are really structural in terms of things like housing affordability, child welfare, record clearing, even just access to dedicated housing vouchers, and then, you know, just general things like, you know, increasing access to education and other types of resources. And then, you know, at the end of the day, also looking at, you know, where does the funding come from for these resources? So some of our recent work has really focused on, okay, if we're saying that there needs to be this many shelter beds, then let's make sure that we're guaranteeing that a certain number are for young people. If we need this many outreach workers, then let's make sure that a percentage of those know how to engage with a young person who it's going to take a little bit longer to develop their trust. And, you know, these are all for us, this kind of multi-pronged approach that we really believe, you know, ultimately, you know, 3,000 people is a lot of people, but it feels manageable. Like it feels like there should be a way that we can reach that number of people. And so we continue to press on in that direction.
Are they limited to how long they can stay with you?
In some of the programs, yes. In some of the housing programs, we work with them to move through in, you know, that 3-year time span. But, you know, coming to the drop-in center, we have no limits on, you know, how long. We recognize that, again, some people might have a job, they might be housed, but then maybe they, you know, have a child and now they need clothing for their children or they need diapers or, you know, they're trying to stretch their paycheck a little farther. And so we want them to feel like they can come back and that we can continue to provide those resources. Or sometimes young people are, you know, fully stable and housed, but that they want to continue to see the same therapist, for example, or, you know, maybe they've decided to go back to school and they need some support with that. So things like our drop-in center, we continue to make available to young people up until they're 25. And then hopefully we are able to help connect them to permanent housing and, you know, they're able to carry it forward from there.
That's wonderful. I know that as a Rotarian from the Playa Venice Sunrise Rotary, we are very supportive of what you do. We have a, what we call our spy jar that we pass around at every meeting that people can just put loose change in or dollar bills or however much they'd like to put in there that we do that. And I know we've also actually been to your site. I've seen myself, you know, the racks of clothing where somebody can come in because maybe they're going to go on a job interview or they're going to go someplace and they don't have anything to wear. And so I know that you collect that kind of clothing too. So I thought you could talk a little bit about how can the community help those that are listening.
Yeah, thank you. And you all have, the Rotarians are incredible. We're so grateful for your support and having made that connection for us. And, you know, there are lots of ways for the community to get involved. You know, what you're doing here with amplifying the work and, you know, the urgency of the issue is enormous. And we really encourage folks to share forward, you know, what you hear and what you see about youth homelessness to help reframe the narrative and engage people in supporting. And, you know, we have lots of different volunteer opportunities. Our volunteers cook meals, they serve meals, you know, they work in the clothing closet and help outfit young people. We accept donations of clothing, non-perishable items, household items. We have folks that have special unique talents. Like we have one volunteer who does a sewing class on Mondays and the youth absolutely love the opportunity to learn how to sew. And, you know, it's another type of expression. They get to do fashion shows. And so those are other kinds of volunteer opportunities. We have volunteers that come to our garden, and participate in workshops with young people, helping create items for the social enterprise and, you know, just really kind of a range of ways. We have an incredible, you know, outreach to donors to help support the work. We receive some public funding, but it probably covers about 70% of our work. And so we're, you know, very grateful for the community that helps supplement that. And, you know, really, I think just we, you know, some of our recent advocacy push, we engage the community around that and knowing that elected officials want to hear from their constituents and that those are powerful voices in the community. So really lots of opportunities to get involved. And we couldn't do this work without the community.
Absolutely. How does Safe Place for Youth address the youth homelessness differently than other organizations?
So we're one of the larger youth homeless service organizations and thankfully have been able to offer kind of a broader array of services. And so we really try to think of how do we go broad and how do we, you know, go deep in terms of our impact. So I think that we have lots of touch points in that way. We are the only youth homeless services organization in LA that has a policy and advocacy arm. And so we try to be a connector for our community and other providers to help amplify One of the things that we have is a really robust, we call them the Spy Squad, and they're the youth leaders and advocates. And, you know, we work with them on public speaking, how to share their story, how to communicate with electeds, you know, about the unique needs of young people. And I think it does come as a surprise sometimes to people that, you know, adult services don't meet the needs of young people, and that young people are less successful when they try to go into adult shelters. And so hearing directly from a youth about why youth-specific services is important is so much more powerful than, you know, when I'm telling that story. And so I think there are, you know, some specific unique things, and then there are things that are, you know, more about how we utilize sort of non-traditional healing. So there are some programs in organizations, youth programs that have an arts component to them, much less so in adult serving organizations. And meals and the arts are sort of the two greatest draws for young people. We get a lot of young people that participate in that program specifically for a while before they're ready to talk about shelter, or before they're ready to talk about, you know, the need for mental health support. And sometimes it just helps facilitate a conversation. We know a lot of the young people are dealing with, you know, trauma that caused their homelessness, and unfortunately lots of trauma that happens once they are unhoused. And so things like dance, expressive arts, you know, we've had drumming circles, things that just help young people kind of get some of that out in a way that's productive and constructive, has been really valuable. So just, you know, different types of touch points for different people. The Spy Squad Youth Advocates have been particularly successful in terms of their trajectories of employment and getting housed. And we attribute that to kind of self-esteem building. You know, the power of their voice, the power of a community that they come to every week. We compensate them for their participation in recognition that, you know, they really are the experts in how to deliver these services, and they are the experts in their own experience. And we value that. And we don't want young people to have to pick between having a job and being able to develop their leadership skills. And often those are young people that are employed faster, they're stably housed faster. And so we really see the value in the empowerment aspect and self-esteem building.
That makes sense. That makes sense what you just said, and you touched on this, but I thought you could just expand, if you could tell us more about some of the programs or the initiatives that you are the most proud of, because this is quite an organization.
No, thank you. You know, I think one of the things that I was most proud of was that we were successfully able to address what was called a housing cliff. And so there was a period in time where over 1,000 youth were facing imminent homelessness from the end of the pandemic relief funding that had allowed them to remain in care. And then when that money ended, there was kind of this you know, this scramble to figure out, you know, where could 1,000 youth go? And so we were part of working with other providers to place youth in different housing opportunities. But at the 11th hour, the start of December, there were still 44 youth that had nowhere to go and were going to become homeless on New Year's Day, which, you know, is just conceptually heartbreaking. But, you know, we really were committed to one way or another. We were going to give it our all to do, you know, what we could to prevent that from happening. And what we ended up doing was we launched a shelter specifically for that group. On about 2 weeks' notice, which to staff a 24-hour program, to you know, establish site control, get it set up with beds and pest control and all the things you need to operate a shelter. And we were able to do that and ultimately prevent a single youth exiting the child welfare system at that time from having to go into homelessness. And so we were really, really proud of that effort. And, you know, some of our supporters saw the impact of that work and ultimately ended up sustaining the funding for that program. And what we did from there was to have, you know, researchers and evaluators look at the program and to figure out, you know, what is the county's need for this type of a program? You know, what is the effectiveness of the program? And it was really intended to be short term, because we, in terms of the length of stay for the young people there, with, you know, a partnership with Department of Child and Family Services and understanding that, you know, they would be starting to prep youth on their end before youth aged out of child welfare and trying to get them connected to vouchers or get them connected to employment. But that if those things didn't come through as of their court date, that we could carry it forward from there. So they would help them get connected to us. We would shelter them, provide food, showers, you know, the gamut of services that we have available, and then be able to connect them to resources that sometimes take a shockingly long amount of time to come to fruition. So a youth can apply for a voucher and it might take them 2 years to get housed from there. And so in that time, that's the time in which a lot of young people end up on the street, or they end up having nowhere to go, or maybe they aged out of the child welfare system and they were planning to stay on, you know, their aunt's couch, and they had one disagreement with their aunt and now they have nowhere to go. And then I think sometimes, again, this long-term planning, you know, it sneaks up on you. And especially when you're a young person, you know, 3 months feels like a long time away, but when you have 3 months where you have to be able to sustain your income and your housing independently, it's not a lot of time. And so that program that we call Stepping Stones, I think, you know, we were proud of what it accomplished with the housing cliff, but it has also remained, you know, part of the infrastructure of LA County's child welfare system. It's the only program of its kind, and we support by having that resource available. So we hold beds open. So if a young person's housing plan falls through on their court date, we can immediately bring them into shelter to help them avoid all the vulnerabilities that they would have encountered had they become unhoused. So we continue to work to sustain that, and it ended up having really positive outcomes. We had a 7% higher placement rate of youth into permanent housing than traditional adult shelter would have. We were able to permanently house 78% of the youth that came through that program, which is much higher than traditional shelter. And then just being able to offer 100% of youth exiting child welfare that resource, I think, has really given us, you know, a boost that we're doing what we can do to address prevention efforts.
Are they limited to how long they can spend with you?
So we tried initially with the first model to have young people move through the program in 30 days. And then as shelters became less available, as our shelter in West LA, Sunset, we expanded that to 90 days. But we have a policy that we don't exit youth to the street. Even youth who are not complying with program requirements, we connect them to another program. And if it's a safety concern, then we'll, you know, have them, you know, stay overnight in a hotel and then be able to move them in the morning, for example, to a new program. But the young people who are participating in program, if it exceeds, you know, 90 days, if it needs, you know, they need a couple more months, you know, we make that available. You know, for us, it doesn't make sense to exit somebody who, you know, we could have with one more month gotten them on their feet. If as long as they're participating in the program, you know, because we don't want people to get stuck and languish in shelters. So, you know, their case managers are meeting with them weekly to check on, you know, their job searches, even things that, you know, are kind of surprising, but sometimes youth exit without any documentation. So they need a driver's license, or, you know, they need to be connected to medical support or a psychiatrist or something like that. So, you know, we try to work with them, you know, assuming that, you know, they're doing their part to ultimately move forward.
That's great. So how do you involve these youth voices to shape the services you offer?
Yeah. So our spy squad is really instrumental in that, in giving us feedback directly. The new drop-in center that we just opened in Venice, we had the young people even come tell us how to appoint the space. A lot of our sites have big outdoor space, and this one is, you know, particularly enclosed. Like, there's some little patios, but it doesn't have as much outdoor space as some of the, you know, our housing programs or other drop-in centers have had. And so, hearing feedback from them about, what are the trauma-informed color scheme that they like, what makes the space feel warm and cozy and, reflects sort of that youth-centric vibe. The Spy Squad themselves provides feedback. They're, of course, the way we embed youth voice in our policy and advocacy, hearing about, the issues that are most pressing for them. One of the issues that we heard about was that youth coming out of the foster care system were having a particularly difficult time getting vouchers. And so that was really critical for us to kind of pinpoint the issue for, where to support young people. We do things like satisfaction surveys, following services, and we've also been really proud to develop leaders who have joined our team and have become part of the staff and developing the programs and providing their insights in that way. So wherever we can incorporate their feedback into how to make them successful, we know that we stand a greater likelihood of getting them there.
Oh, I think that's terrific. You mentioned one barrier, so I'm just wondering if there's other barriers that these young people are facing when they're trying to exit homelessness and how you guys are supporting them.
Yeah, there's so many challenging hurdles. And, I think back to, trying to find my first job and trying to get my first place. And, I had a lot of support and I feel really fortunate in that. But, it's really hard if there's nobody to tell you, these are the kinds of things that are that you need to think about in terms of having references. So for example, a lot of young people, when they're applying for apartments, people want to talk to their previous landlord, for example. They may not have a previous landlord. It might have been a foster group home or something like that. And so a lot of times, even things like references are hard. Sometimes the young people get overwhelmed by just the volume of forms they need to fill out, how to get an ID. If you've gotten your ID before, you know what it takes to sign up online, or you're going to be standing at the DMV for however long. And sometimes the young people don't know that because they're doing it for the first time and nobody's shown them. Even things like, I'll never forget this young person who was doing his laundry. He was purchasing Tide Pods, doing his laundry, and he was dumping the whole bag of pods into the laundry instead of just the one pod. And yeah, so it was one of those things where, I'm sure there's instructions on the back, but when you're a young person, sometimes you're like, I got this. I'm just going to just do this way. And so it was even just having somebody to say, hey, you only need one of those, you don't have to be buying a whole bag every time you do a load of laundry. And things like cooking and, how to make a healthy meal on a budget and, how to, put away a little bit of money so that they, can have a security deposit when they need it. And then the same is true of employment, that, it's really hard if you don't have a prior employment history, or maybe you weren't able to finish high school or something like that. And, we have staff that work with them to get their GEDs, to help them get scholarships and things to go to college. And just even trying to be that moral support along the way when folks feel hopeless or they feel like, they're not going to be able to get out of this circumstance. Sometimes it's just a case manager saying, hey, are you up? Are you ready to go? Did you get your bus pass? Are you, going to get to the bus on time? And sometimes it's a little bit of like scaffolding, like, okay, we're going to get you this far. Like we're going to do a ride share to the DMV. But next time, let's talk about what is the bus route and let's make sure that you have a tap card. And just sort of that, step-by-step planning, I think is really, something that's hard if you're doing it for the first time.
Sure. Well, you had mentioned at the beginning of the hour that the age of young people, if I misunderstood you, please correct me, range from about 12 to 25. So clearly the needs of a 12-year-old is not the needs of an 18-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reason 12 is because that's the age at which minors can consent to mental health. And so we do see young people who are specifically struggling with mental health concerns. Sometimes it's family rejection. Sometimes it's even things like substance use, unfortunately. And so we want to make that accessible. Some young people don't have enough to eat at home, or maybe, are lacking in a particular item that they need. Maybe they're short on clothing or they don't have winter clothing. And so those are all resources we can provide to youth. And some of our programming is things just like journaling and poetry. And, you know, we're going to be extending our drop-in center hours starting in July to 7 p.m. so that we're just a literal safe place sometimes for young folks to not be on the street, to be out of harm's way. You know, there are these enforcement zones throughout Los Angeles where, you know, young people who are standing are vulnerable to kind of enhanced citations in a way that they are not in outside of these enforcement zones. So anytime that they're not out there, they're avoiding somebody trying to exploit them, avoiding an interaction with law enforcement, and hopefully working on, you know, something that will be sustainable. But even just being a literal safe place for youth is our goal. And sadly, we have had youth that come through our drop-in center that are fleeing somebody exploiting them. You know, that we've had situations where there's been traffickers outside of the building looking for a youth that they're exploiting. And so, you know, that place to get away and make a phone call, you know, for us to help set them up somewhere else is really critical.
Yeah. So when you look over this experience, because I think you said it started in 2011 with Allison starting this in, how do you, that's quite some time. How do you measure your success with what you're doing?
We think of the individual in terms of the individual success as defined by the young person. So really working with them in the beginning to establish their goals, and, you know, figure out where they want to end up on their trajectory. But overall, we as an organization see our success through the number of young people we're able to reach. And we also look at, you know, how many touch points did we have with somebody? You know, so if somebody came to our drop-in center, were we able to get them mental health? Were we able to get them a job? And to cross-reference that data to see, you know, what does our engagement look like? But we've also been doing a lot of work around moving the system and, you know, moving advocacy and policy in the direction that will prevent homelessness and also address the issue once homelessness has occurred. And so where we've been able to, you know, move the, you know, local government, the federal government in a direction where there's more access to resources, greater protections for youth. Those are all things that we're particularly proud of.
I bet. So how do you balance everything, right? So how do you balance the immediate needs like the shelter and the safety with the long-term goals of permanent housing and education and employment? How do you balance those needs?
Yeah, that's, you know, in the initial conversations with young people, we try to get a sense of where those things are. And so we start super low barrier and just, you know, welcoming people through our doors and then, you know, try to understand what resources they have access to. And, you know, I think we think of it in terms of kind of the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that people need their life-sustaining needs met first. And so those things like food and clothing and access to showers. And then from there, moving into, you know, shelter. And, you know, one of the things that we try to help people understand is that once people are in shelter, it is much easier for them to get connected to employment. It is much easier for them to get connected to education. And, you know, sometimes I think there's a misunderstanding about, well, just push people to get a job and then they'll be able to get their housing. But people need a place to sleep at night so that they are rested and able to work. They need a place to take a shower, to store their belongings. And, you know, if you think about showing up to a job interview with a backpack full of all of your belongings, or, you know, showing up not having had a rested night and trying to interview when there's people who have, you know, those are barriers that they're facing. And so trying to get them into shelter from there, you know, potentially into housing, and then supporting them in dealing with, you know, histories of trauma. A lot of times young people are not as immediately readily to seek traditional mental health. And, you know, a lot of them have been connected to therapists before, and those can be some of their ruptured attachments, or you know, people who they feel like have let them down. But over time, the connection that we're able to build with them and the trust we're able to build, you know, it might be the therapist just coming through and doing some outreach during the art class and then saying, hey, that's a really emotional painting, or that was a really emotional poem. Do you have somebody to talk to about that? And saying, oh, you know, the youth might say, oh, I don't need therapy, I don't want therapy. And then it's like, oh, well, hey, you know, this conversation we've been having every week when you're doing your paintings, it could be something like that, you know. And so eventually we're able to, you know, help young people open up and, you know, start to have conversations about, oh, hey, you know, you're trying to find a job, but if you're, you know, having to use substances to cope with your trauma, that's going to be a major hurdle. And we see young folks who use substances even to just stay up at night to be safe, you know, so those are the kinds of things that are harder to address when young people are unsheltered. And then we give them an opportunity when they're in housing to start to maybe complete a couple years of community college, you know, get a little longer tenure at their employer under their belt. And what happens often when you're looking for an apartment is that an employer is going to want to see a couple paychecks. They're going to want to know that somebody's going to be able to sustain that rent. And you know, we need time to help young people apply for a voucher or something like that. So usually it's sort of progressive in that way. But then, you know, people come to us and they're set up with some resources, but they need, you know, some still light touch resources. We have somebody who really enjoys our pottery class, and she's, you know, got all the things that she needs outside of our services. But, you know, pottery is kind of how she, you know, processes just a hard day. You know, we all have hard days and work stress and things like that. And, you know, that's part of people's long-term stability too.
I know. You had mentioned that advocacy is a big part of your mission. Maybe you could just tell us a little bit more about how you do that.
Yeah, I think that with advocacy, it's kind of been approached in different directions. One of the things that we came to discover was that there were insufficient housing vouchers for youth. At the same time, there were housing vouchers going unused at the federal level. And so our advocacy team really took that on and going to every housing authority in Los Angeles and saying, hey, it's a one-page application for you all to apply to the federal government for these vouchers. They're there. You know, our community needs them. And I think sometimes, you know, going to, in this case, the housing authority, not all the staff there were even aware that these existed or how to apply. Like everybody else, they're spread really thin and maybe it didn't flow to the top of their priorities. But when we have youth, you know, standing there saying, hey, you know, I, through no fault of my own, you know, was exposed to whatever I was exposed to in the home environment, detained by the county, you know, I'm now leaving and I have nothing. This is a resource I need your help with, that we found that elected officials, you know, would prioritize this higher, you know, seeing the face and the story behind who's being impacted. And so that was really successful advocacy. And we were able to draw down over 100 vouchers from the federal government a year that were not otherwise available. So, you know, that's 100 people a year that, you know, will have a housing resource that didn't have one previously. And our most recent great big advocacy push was around the county's Measure A funding. The Measure A is mostly supportive services and housing funding, and it's following Measure H. Measure H was a 0.25-cent sales tax. This is a 0.5-cent sales tax that's intended to, you know, raise funding for these really vital services. And what happened simultaneous to this was a lawsuit by the LA Alliance against the city and the county for, you know, insufficiently having addressed homelessness. And the outcome, the settlement outcome, was a substantial increase in the amount of outreach workers and shelter beds, which on the one hand are wonderful. The other side of it, however, is how do you pay for these things? And so what ended up happening is that because this was part of a lawsuit settlement, the city and the county were required to produce beds regardless of where the money came from, and they began cutting other services, and they cut a lot of the programming for youth. And that was one of the places that they intended to get the funding, without a guarantee of youth services sheltered, without a guarantee of some of those beds going to youth. And so we really activated our community around this issue, providing lots of education sessions, pushing out advocacy toolkits, asking people to write letters and make phone calls. We came to the Board of Supervisors meeting about a month ago, a little less than a month ago, and a lot of our staff, our young people, talked about the impact of the services and what it would be like to have those go away. And ultimately, the Board of Supervisors unanimously voted to restore the funding for youth services. So that was a great big win for us in terms of what we'll be able to do into the future for young people. But really also, you know, again, the power of community to come together and say, hey, this is what we believe. You know, we don't want to be a society where we have children and young adults who are sleeping on the streets. Like, this is not who we are. And the Board of Supervisors heard it.
That's wonderful. So what are your hopes for Safe Place for Youth over the next 5 years?
Well, in this strategic planning process, we identified some key priorities. And, you know, again, I really believe that there is a way to end youth homelessness. And so we continue to, you know, drive towards that. But it does require greater prevention efforts. And so as a starting point, reducing the number of young people exiting the child welfare system to homelessness. But also, you know, in recognition that, you know, the need is everywhere. And thankfully, we saw a decrease in homelessness in last year's point in time count, and we're waiting to find out, you know, the total number as of this most recent count. But we recognize the need is still greater than the available resources. And so, you know, we hope to grow our programs to make sure that there is shelter for youth in West LA, to make sure that we are able to sustain this shelter resource for youth who are aging out. We want to create pathways to employment, kind of like our garden internships. There's not enough people working in homeless services, and we're always, always trying to fill key positions. And so our hope is that we're able to create internships on our team so young people can kind of dip their toe into homeless services, see if it's for them, potentially work at Safe Place for Youth. If not, potentially work at one of the other fantastic provider organizations. And then also looking at how do we deepen the quality of our work. So in our pregnant and parenting programs, we have really wonderful pregnant and parenting specialists. And we want to also look at, you know, not just how do we prepare folks to be parents and how to sustain a household for their children, but also how do we look at those children and make sure that they're getting the medical care they need, that they're enrolling in school, that they're well-resourced. And so, you know, that potentially they need to be connected to regional centers, so that we want to make sure that we have that specialized services to provide pediatric, to do disability screenings, and to also support the children of the youth that come to us. So kind of an array, but, you know, the advocacy work is really key to our long-term strategy.
You know, it's interesting how technology has changed so much in the last 5 years, and smartphones and laptops as opposed to desktops and different kinds of technology. And, you know, I don't know if do these young people have access to cell phones?
You know, I feel like if there's one piece of technology youth manage to have, it's a cell phone, but not all of them. And, you know, not all of them have consistent service, which can make it hard to maintain contact with them. But some of the youth have cell phones. We try to, you know, we allow them to charge their phones at our site, or, you know, sometimes one of our donation requests is for solar chargers, so youth can charge their phones out in the community. And that's really important for their safety, for their applying for jobs, they're waiting to hear back from a landlord. We also have a little computer bank at our in our education employment program, so they can come use the computers there to check emails. And we part of our reunification program is to also work with young people to identify potentially a family member, even if it means relocating across the country to go find a family member to reside with. And so it's really important for them to be able to maintain their correspondence and do outreach. And sometimes the only thing they might have is an email or a phone number. And that, you know, we need to then help build that relationship over Zoom. So, we try to create some access to technology for them there. And then we also have some higher level technology like photography class and digital arts class. And so, technology is huge. And certainly young people are particularly interested and connected to technology.
I'm sure that's true, but I mean, somebody has to pay the cell phone bill. Where does that money come from?
That's really tough. A lot of young folks don't have sustainable resources, and sometimes do get their cell phones cut off. And we try to work with them to budget and work with other some different cell phone services and public resources help provide a little bit of money for that, but certainly not everybody. And more is of course needed.
Well, I just want to thank you. I want to thank you for what you're doing. You're making connections and changing the lives of people that you may never hear about how you did that. There may be somebody writing a book about this experience right now. And what you're doing, Erica, is phenomenal. And I just want to thank you once again for sharing what you do. A Safe Place for Youth has its own website. People can find it. I'll make sure that they can find it. It's really just safeplaceforyouth.org. But just know that I've appreciated sharing this time with you, and I hope that those of you that are listening will consider making a contribution. No contribution is too small.
Thank you so much, Marcia. And you're a perfect example of, the community amplifying this message. So we're super grateful for that.
You're very welcome. Have a great rest of your day, everybody. And once again, I'm so very grateful to be able to share these inspiring stories. Bye for now, everybody.